The Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy will come to order. Members, we're going to go through a little history of this commission, but it's been dormant a little bit. It was created in 87. It's been dormant. And in discussions with the Speaker, we thought it might be appropriate to bring it back to life a little bit and use it appropriately, which we can discuss more. But this is certainly not meant to get in the way of our finance committees or our tax committees, but it's an attempt to try to bring some coordination between the House and the Senate as we deal with budgetary issues. You'll also find out that this is where the Northwest Airlines stuff was all discussed years ago. And I think the stadiums were discussed in here years ago. And I think we should say for the record, we are absolutely not interested in either stadiums.
You might be
hopefully not Northwest Airlines this year.
Chairman, don't go too far down that runway.
Down the runway.
Well, I mean, we're not going to talk about stadiums this year for sure. I'm pretty certain of that. Aren't we?
I'm disappointed, Mr. Chairman.
So. Mr. Pogemiller, I have no intention of having a discussion about stadiums in this committee.
So I think the first order of business, this part of the cycle is the Senate's term to be chair. And so I think an appropriate motion would be for hopefully myself to be chair and the Speaker to be vice chair. And the Speaker to be vice chair. And apparently this one is set up where it's on the full biennium.
Okay.
So next year, the House then would chair it for 2 years. We've already missed 1 year for the Senate.
But you are a former seatmate.
Senator Bedsell. Senator Bedsell.
You got it. Go ahead.
Nominate Senator Pogemiller for the
chair.
Chair.
And the Speaker.
Speaker as
vice.
Vice chair.
Okay, on that motion, any discussion?
Wait, do you want to discuss this?
No. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Okay, then. Senator Frederickson.
Sure, you're talking about the history of the commission. I think this commission was formed in the State Department's bill of 1986 or 87. I think it was a bill that Representative Dave Bishop originated. And I think Bill Luther was a champion in the Senate.
Hmm. Well, why don't we go right to that? Mr. Marks, you want to join us? And Mr. Watson, we have a one-pager here. And you also want to join us? Just to give us, they're going to just tell us. We have a one-page where they've coordinated some information about where this came from and why it exists. Who wants to? Watson, Marks?
Mr. Chairman, if I could start, Peter Watson, Senate Counsel. It's actually a two-pager, and you might want to start on the back page. It shows that it indeed began with the State Department's bill of 1987. And if you look quickly through it, you'll see that it meets not regularly, not often, but on important matters. It started out with a couple of meetings in 87, 88, that I can't really verify that they actually happened. I have notes related to two meetings, but I don't have any minutes. Talking about the bonding policy, putting on some kind of a debt service limit, talking about the Buildings Commission. The 91 meeting on the mandate to study local government fiscal reporting was a problem that people had noticed, that there was not good accurate reporting from local governments, and so when trying to measure the fiscal condition of cities in Minnesota, that was the LAD report. They came back and said, well, this is the fiscal condition as far as we can tell what it might be, but we really can't tell very well, and we recommend that you do a major study to provide for some uniform financial reporting of cities. And so that issue that started in 91, you'll see, wasn't really wrapped up until 1999, a longer-term thing. You can see the CORE report back in 91 and Northwest Airlines. We got into the statewide systems project, which resulted in the new financial accounting and reporting systems that are in use now. Price of government, this commission was used as a forum for discussing the concurrent resolution on price of government in 95 and 97 and 99, and after that it seems not to have been used for that purpose. The stadium issues in 97, you'll remember the special session in the fall of 87. Northwest Airlines again in 2000. and budget principles in 2001. There were a couple of meetings. I think that Mr. Marks may have a record of additional meetings in 2002 on that subject, and maybe you could
Mr. Marks. From there.
Mr. Chair, members, in I don't have dates of meetings, but in 2001 and 2002, the commission formed a subcommittee that consisted of Representatives Bishop and Soberg and Senators Cohen and Frederickson, and discussed a number of budget principles and actually adopted three papers coming out of that subcommittee and then adopted by the commission. Those papers, one was a statutory appropriations guide, one was a funds and accounts guide, and one is budget rules. Those were all various looking at those topics and then making some suggestions, recommendations, kind of guidelines for those areas. I'll just put a plug in. Those papers are posted on the House webpage under the Fiscal Analysis Department if anyone's interested in them. But
we absolutely are, and we should pull those up. Do people want hard copies, or can people look them up? Why don't we get hard copies and get them to all the members?
Okay. And that discussion went through 2002, and I recall the last meeting that I recall of the commission was in December of 2002, finally adopting those papers, and I don't believe the commission has met since.
Okay. So we need to look and see the work product and see whether they had answered all questions or whether someone didn't like what they had done.
Mr. Chair, I'm nervous.
Sarah Cohen, was that good work? Or Frederickson, was that? Do you remember kind of what those papers were?
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Chairman, it's not dissimilar from what we've been discussing over these last couple of weeks.
Okay.
And that's why I've said relative to some of our discussion today that, you know, we've tried to do some of this. And
okay. And I think I was told that the generation of the whole idea of a Planning and Policy Commission kind of came out of House nonpartisan staff to try to put some rigor in the budget process. Is that a fair way to say that?
I'm told.
A Senate staffer used to be a House staffer, Marcy Jeffries, and she said it kind of came. Is she sitting here?
Yeah, she's talking to Cohen.
So, just for purposes, it.
So, Senator Pogamiller, you're saying that the House was thoughtful about this process,
yes,
and wanted to,
yes,
introduce more thoughtful process.
Yes, and now that you've planted a House staffer in the Senate staff, apparently you're getting your way.
And Mr. Chair, I might just add along those discussions that part of the impetus for this was the kind of the ongoing discussion about the possibility of a legislative budget office or a joint House-Senate budget office. This concept was to have at least a commission that could discuss those kinds of concepts and review budget issues and possibly make recommendations on those budget issues, but a joint House-Senate forum for doing so.
And I think not everybody was here. I want to make it clear, and the Speaker and I have already talked about this, we absolutely don't want to do anything here that gets in the way of the Finance Committees, Tax Committees, or the Budget Ways and Means Committee in the House. That we don't want any duplication. So it's really more of an opportunity jointly to make sure that whatever coordination is possible is possible. And we'll just have to feel our way through this. And I want to encourage the chairs of those committees, if you do think at some point this group, which isn't going to meet very often, gets in your way, please voice that, because I have no intent on trying to duplicate, and I'm sure the Speaker doesn't. So then let's just I want to point out one. Senator Cohen, can I use the Wall Street Journal today, not the New York Times?
Senator Frederickson wants to say something.
We always have this argument about who gets to quote newspapers, and one Wall Street Journal today. There are three articles. One says that the inflation rate is worse than we think, and it's probably closer to 4.3% than the core number of 2.5 that's being used. That's just for people to think about. Another article says Target's profits were down 8.1%. There was another article that said Home Depot's profits were down about 8%. So that's probably is telling us where we're headed. And then an interesting article about the Minneapolis Grain Exchange in money and investing section. Wheat closed yesterday at $22.40. A year ago, now wheat is pizzas,
bread.
Yesterday was at $22.40. Last year, a year ago, it was at $5. And this article explains how folks on the floor are saying, oh my gosh, something's going on here. So I think there seems to be a lot of signs here that we may be on the front end of something, not in the middle of something. And I think we need to consider that as we proceed. For disclosure to the House, there's a letter that was sent to Governor Plenty on February 18th from myself, Senator Cohen, and Senator Bach. It just lays out some general kind of thoughts we had about how we were going to be thinking about the budget in the Senate. And that's just for your information. We hope the House thinks along these lines also, but we absolutely understand that something we just want you to know that we sent to the governor.
You signed out.
And then finally, I think what we want to talk about is some potential principles on the budget. And there is a draft here somewhere. Has that been handed out?
Yes.
Yes. And why don't we have Mr. Marks and Ms. Jeffries? You want to join us, the two of you? And this is totally a draft. It's something that's, I guess, used from previous documents, informal discussions. No intent to vote on this today, just for some general discussion. And then the intent would be to suggest that we forward a draft like this to that committee that we set up, the State Budget Trends Commission. Remember, we appointed that. And just ask them for their comments on a potential draft. Informally. That's as far as I was hoping to go today, not to go too far too fast. Senator Cohen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I didn't have the opportunity to talk to you about this letter to the Budget Trends Commission.
Well, we haven't done it yet. That's a suggestion we might do that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll wait till you're
okay.
Ready. Okay.
Fine. That was just a thought.
Okay.
So.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski isn't here. I don't know if she's going to be coming, but would want her input if she's going to be here.
Absolutely. I hope she's going to be here. So just on this budget principles, why don't you go through it real quick? It's totally a draft, and I would say it's pretty much been put together by Ms. Jeffries in talking with budget people. So it's probably not have as much House input yet. So I just want to forewarn you, although Mr. Marks has seen it, has chatted with Ms. Jeffries, or you haven't seen it in this forum.
Mr. Chair, I'm reading it.
Okay. So, but it's totally a draft. So, Ms. Jeffries.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, this is just a draft of basically stripping down some of the principles that have been discussed over the last few years about what makes good budgeting. And no doubt probably not everybody would be in agreement with all of them. And the first section under the notion of budget integrity is the notion of accounting for inflation and forecasting future expenditures as well as revenues. That's come out of the Council on Economic Advisers forecast document for several years. Another principle is to adequately fund mandated programs and the state share of commitments that have been made in law. Another one is to use dedicated revenue for the purposes for which it was raised. So if money is raised and to be deposited in a dedicated fund, that it should be used for those purposes. Under the general heading of fairness is basing the state tax system on the ability to pay, and relates again to the tax incident studies and those kind of analyses to determine if that's happening or not. To share the state and local tax burden proportionally across all incomes, which is related to that notion, and reestablishing state responsibility in the schools, county, city, and state fiscal partnership. Several people have come over to the legislature talking about the fact that the state is not fully living up to commitment on some of its major programs. In terms of budget stability, balancing projected revenues and expenditures for two biennia at a time. Several years ago, that was not done, but for several budget biennials, that has been the intent. Establishing structural balance by the end of the fourth year so that looking at ongoing revenues, that they are sufficient to support spending, not just revenues that might have been carried forward. Limiting the use of one-time spending to provisions that are truly one-time in nature, that don't fund base operations or create ongoing spending pressure. So, again, there may be some spending that is labeled one time, but in reality is not it's probably going to create pressures for ongoing spending. An example might be a pilot project where you might only provide 1 year of funding, but if the expectation is out there that funding is likely to continue, you've sort of created ongoing expectations. ensuring sufficient resources are available in future biennia to support commitments made in the current biennia, and that, again, is a similar notion. Increasing the budget reserve to 5% of biennial spending, and that, again, is a recommendation coming out of the Council on Economic Advisors. They frequently recommend that in their budget document. And then in the event that revenues and spending are growing, that some of the things that should take high priority would be to provide for automatic additions to the budget reserve to bring it up to 5%. In current law, there was that expectation to bring it up, I believe, at the current level of $650 million. And then, if possible, to start reversing shifts that had been enacted during previous budget crises and to address underfunded mandates. Finally, in the area of accountability and transparency, there has been some concern, as the budget documents have changed over the years, that there's less information on spending history and on base budgets. And that has been sometimes, I think, where the legislature has agreed to some of those changes, but to kind of revisit that and see if there's other information that you need, maybe different kind of information you need for decision-making, and that would also be of value to the public. And then monitoring public programs, performance, and outcomes to ensure cost-effective use of taxpayers' resources. There's a lot about performance evaluation. A lot of that data is available, but it's not always clear that it's used in the budget decision-making process as well as it could be.
Okay. Members, we're not looking for solutions. We're looking in a perfect world. How might we consider looking at our budgets and budgets that are presented to us? So open for discussion.
Thank you.
Representative Silver.
That's very kind of you. Mr. Chair, and I want to go down to number four, if you would, please. The first bullet that you have there. And I know that the fiscal staff from both the House and the Senate, the nonpartisan fiscal staff, along with Department of Revenue staff, I think, and others, have been at least working and trying to find a way for the legislature to be informed of not necessarily the requests that go forward from a department up to the Department of Finance. Because sometimes, I don't care who the governor is, they protect that. But many times it's extremely important for the legislature to be able to know that there are creative ideas down in the department that sometimes never get past the dollar sign. And it would be great, I think, to be able to say from a legislative standpoint, as we look at their base budgets and other things, activities in a particular department, to have the ability to request from that department to be able to have a mechanism of getting those creative ideas down into the from the staff that may not get necessarily past the Department of Finance. And so I know Bill Marks and others are working on some kind of a solution that keeps in mind the ability of the executive branch to have some data privacy on some of the issues that are there. I respect that. But also to have the legislative branch have information that they may need. A good example of that is, I think, the mesothelioma problem that existed. That if the legislature had found out about that beforehand, we would have prevented a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of difficulties. And there may have been some creative ideas down in the Department of Health at the time to be able to solve that problem earlier on. So I just want to say that I know that the staff is working, and I don't know if Mr. Marks wants to comment on that or not, but I think that's an important issue to have a relationship, this is a good forum to have that relationship.
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Soberg raised the issue of what had been called the agency requests, and it going back, I believe, to 1994-95, budget pages showed a column for agency requests, and that agency request might be different than the governor's recommendation. That evolved to the agency request and the governor's recommendation were basically always the same, and then a few years ago, in discussions with the Department of Finance, we agreed to take the agency request column out because the process had evolved, I think, to the point where basically, agencies only requested what the governor told them was going to be recommended. Maybe that might be the way to put it. I think the issue being raised here is that essentially legislators would like to know what the people working in the agencies who work with these issues suggest or recommend for changes in laws, and the problem is those changes might still never get to an agency recommendation level because if they can't be funded or if the commissioner doesn't think it's a good idea, they're not going to make it into that kind of process. So it's I kind of jokingly said the other day to somebody, well, the idea seems to be give us your good ideas. And I think that's kind of what it is what do the experts in the departments who work with the issues suggest that might never make it into the budget or never make it to the higher levels of the budget process to be considered even an agency recommendation if that process still existed?
And, Mr. Chair, I know that they've been trying to draft some language that would, allow that to happen. And I think this is probably the right kind of forum for that, those kind of requests to come forward or to have some kind of a discussion on it. And it's also the right kind of forum for each of the different divisions to have that kind of a discussion as well. Because I know there are things that don't get past, for lack of a better word, upper management, that may be very good. And at least we should have the right to know what those people are, those creative ideas that might be.
I believe Commissioner Hansen has actually been working with some staff talking about this. So I don't think the executive branch is necessarily adverse to this. I think it's a workability type discussion. Is that because Commissioner Hansen, when he was in to see me about 2 months ago and brought up that he was willing to chat with our fiscal staff or his people, willing to chat with the fiscal staff about this. So, Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, just thinking about Representative Solberg said, I think we have in state law that until the governor releases the governor's budget, the budget documents leading up to that are not public information. But once the governor releases his budget proposal to the legislature, then all this background information is available.
Mr. Watson?
Mr. Watson, and I have something else I want to say after that, too.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, I think that's generally right, but I think there's been a problem with the background information not always being available in the way that you suggested.
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, that language in the data privacy law also says that I can't quote it exactly, but it's something to the effect of preliminary information is not released. And so it leaves a lot of room for interpretation.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's so I think so a governor can look at all the options, some of which the governor would never propose and nobody would accept, but they want to have them on the table in their very preliminary and formal discussions, so you know they can have a full discussion without reading about it as this scandalous thing that the governor plans to do in the next budget, seeing in the media. But the other point I was going to make is, if we are aware that there are perhaps good ideas down in an agency and the legislature knows about it, we can ask that assistant division director to come before the committee at the committee's request or an individual member's request and ask them about it and have a discussion about it. But the key is we need to know about it first or we can't ask. If we don't know about it, we can't ask. And typically, I know in past agency representatives come before committees and said, well, this is what we're thinking about. This may be a good idea, but they immediately disavow that this is not the governor's recommendation and they are not recommending it as a member of the executive branch, but it's something that was discussed. But the key is to know about it, to have the awareness of it.
So it'd be a little easier for a senior member who's been around to know who to ask because they have met some people. Whereas a newer member on a finance division or something may not...
They might not know who the assistant parks director is in the Department of Department of Natural Resources.
Senator Berglund?
And Mr. Chairman, even if you know who the people are, oftentimes there's a great reticence to let anything out of their desk that isn't in the governor's budget or might contradict that. So it may not be that somebody tells you can't have it. It just may be so slow in coming that by the time you get it, becomes irrelevant, you've had to go ahead and make decisions without it. And that's the way I would describe what happens. Now, sometimes that's not true. Sometimes, for whatever reason, people in an agency might actually really deep down in their heart of hearts believe they had a better idea that got overlooked. Well, then they're oftentimes, you know, more willing to share that with you. But if you're asking to get sort of a complete picture, that usually never happens in terms of all the options that might have been discussed.
Okay, other thoughts on this draft? That's really all we're going to do today, and then we'll be done. So just thoughts on it. So, well, maybe Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, on stability, paragraph 3, where we come down to maintain a budget reserve equal to 5%, I wonder if the better words might be not less than rather than equal. I mean, maybe 5 isn't quite the right number.
I think that 5% is based on what the Council of Economic Advisors have suggested, and we're not at that now. What are we at, actually, if roughly?
Chair, I think we're roughly at about 2.9%.
Mr. Chair, it also makes a difference. Do you count the cash flow account or not? $653 million in the budget reserve, $350 in the cash flow account. They often get grouped together as reserves. But
what do the nonpartisan fiscal staff do? What, how should we be thinking about that? Or should we just decide which way we're thinking about it?
Mr. Chair, I think the cash flow account and the budget reserve can serve as a reserve, and basically there's $1 billion there. But if you want technical terms, no, the cash flow account's not part of it. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, so I think in the Council of Economic Advisors, they would view both of those as reserves.
Part of the number.
Yeah. They would combine them together and say these are available for us.
So if they're together, where are we about if we're together?
He's got his calculator on.
Well, you're at $1,003,1003 on an expenditure budget of $34.7 billion.
Something less than three.
About 2.9%.
Are we trending up or down on that? Maybe you don't know that right now.
Mr. Chair, you're trending down. The reserves have been the same for several years. The budget is going up.
It's getting bigger. We maybe should just get a chart on that at some point between the staffs. Just get us one that I'm asking the finance chairs, do you want to put them together to calculate that number or not, or what do you want to do?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think a combination of that would give us a better picture of the one-time reserves.
Lawrence,
yes, I would agree with that.
Okay, so why don't you just give us kind of a trend line on that, where that's been, where it's at. Okay, anything else for today, or?
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if anybody has any insight about what other states are experiencing at this time.
Who's been to an NCSL conference?
Mr. Chair, I'm just recalling NCSL put out a budget summary, I believe, in November, and I think about two-thirds of the states were expressing concern about the status of their budgets. There were probably about 8 or 10 that were positive and kind of neutral.
And should we gather some information on that and get it out to people?
I think that would be a good idea.
Mr. Chairman, I think the ones that were positive also had large deposits of something we use all the time called energy, natural gas, oil, coal.
And some of the ag states.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering what the timeline is for this. What's your plan in terms of when do you plan to adopt these, or is just discussion?
At this moment, no plan. It's to kind of start to inch up on this, House and Senate, to see if we could come up with a consensus how we want to do this. I think that would be good. If we can't, at least it's an informed discussion then about things we should be thinking about. So I have no intent to press anything. I just people should talk among themselves, and let's just figure out where we're at and see what we can do and can't do. I think we're all going to find out tomorrow that we're all in this together, no matter how you want to look at it. And we're in it with the governor, and we need to figure out a way with the governor to do what makes sense for our state budget. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Some of us are old enough. Am I the only one that's old enough here? Senator Berglund, I guess, was here.
Oh, I was, too.
Dennis? Senator Metz, we've lived through this.
Carlson.
I was here during the Cui years. I absolutely don't think it's going to be, I hope it's not going to be that. But
actually, I chaired a fiscal committee during the Cui years.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in exile then. Mr. Chairman?
And one of the things...
Are you giving tips on exile, Senator Cohen?
Well, I know what it's like to lose.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, if we're going to consider changes in the budget documents, we should, if we're going to present something to the executive or come to a consensus on how we should handle those budget documents, what we'd like to see, we should probably do that by early summer.
Yes.
Because you realize we're only 2 or 3 months away from the governor
another
giving
budget.
The commissioner of finance giving budget directions to the agency, and that whole process starts again. So by the end of the summer, they'll be looking at how they're going to get that to us and making their decisions. So just a comment.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I think what Senator Frederickson is discussing is important. I would hope that. Well, I'm certain I have absolutely zero interest in abdicating any legislative prerogative around this. I would hope that we would invite the governor's office to at least have a discussion with us publicly with regard to their thoughts on this. I'm not suggesting that we should take them, leave them, or otherwise, but I'd like to hear if we are going to move forward with this. Some input from the governor's office. That's the first point. And the second point off of what Representative Emmer was asking, do you know, Senator Pogermiller, do you have I know you say you don't really have a plan necessarily, but, I mean, do you anticipate that this group is going to be meeting next week, next month, or is everything kind of up in the air?
It will depend on what members want to do. I'm not interested. I mean, it's got to be a collaborative kind of discussion, otherwise it's not going to happen. I mean, institutionally, if the House and the Senate don't want to cooperate or are unable to in some fashion, they don't. So we shouldn't have meetings for the sake of meetings. So this is an attempt to just try to see if we can figure out a way to give ourselves some help together. And I'll just say for myself, and I think the Speaker, who's actually been more collaborative with the governor than I have, I absolutely accept your notion that we should seek input from the executive branch on this, and I will forward this. And I have had some discussions with Commissioner Hansen, and I've got a great relationship with Commissioner Innes. So if the Speaker's okay with that, I absolutely will forward this and see what they think. Does that make sense to you?
Sure.
Yeah.
This is speaking to the.
And I hope. I aspire to be as collaborative with the governor as the speaker has been. I aspire to that.
Thank you, Senator Pogermiller. Could I, a couple
Madam
of things.
Speaker.
You know, I have been a fan of us doing more bicameral work that is actually meaningful. So I think if this can serve as a forum to have discussions that are helpful in the process, then I think that's a wonderful thing. I, of course, am interested in making sure that lots of different committees and groups are doing that because I think it moves things ahead for Minnesotans.
Stump's not going to have joint hearings with her, I think.
And I was enjoying so much reading this article about wheat and particularly the spring planting season. I don't think we have the continuation of it, though. So I hope that someone...
You want the full article?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's helpful. I always like to read the full article, not half of the article. So I think that's helpful.
Mr. Chair, in just glancing at that article, I think the most important paragraph in there is the one that's in the third column that said the second paragraph. Said, so Minneapolis has become a ground, so forth, of storage shortage of wheat, which has been caused by drought in Australia and poor weather in other grain-producing countries. So.
Well, I don't know if it's the best paragraph, though, Representative Solberg, because the rest of it isn't there. So I found I was getting really interested at that point.
Well, that's, but I mean, about the little information we were given, I think I picked that out that, that sometimes we have all kinds of blame locally for this particular high prices and so forth, and it's an indication, again, we are in a global market. It's affected, particularly when other countries, China and India, are the two examples. But they're not the only examples. The African countries are importing more of that type of product than for use.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, I think there's some other factors there as well. As we have moved in the world economy, there are some issues with how grain is being used now, and that's what I'm wondering if the rest of the article gets to. And so it would be interesting just to know that we are consuming less grain as human beings and certainly using it more for animal feed and other feedstocks for energy. And so I think there's just some questions about that as well that we should at least examine, since it does have an impact here in Minnesota, and look at. So it's just a curiosity about the rest of the article. I want to make sure.
Could I ask, are you expressing a concern that the Senate doesn't always provide full information?
Well, Senator Pogemiller, I'm just concerned when I only get half the article today. So I want to make sure that Representative Lincheski and Representative Simon are excused from the meeting today. Both had a conflict, so just
make
sure.
Does Bach operate that way? Does he only give you half the articles, too?
Senator Bach and I have a fine working relationship, and it's been often collaborative. So,
often.
I'm hopeful it'll continue that way.
All right. Well, then I think I've had some informal discussions, and I think this draft here, we're not going to send a letter to the Budget Trends Task Force. So. And maybe you should just mention, Senator Cohen, what you told me. I didn't really I hadn't made that differentiation. Your thoughts on the Budget Trends Task Force?
Well, Mr. Chairman, when Representative Lincheski and I passed the legislation, our intent was, in all honesty, to have the legislature keep hands off.
Okay.
And I don't mind arguably presenting our budget principles, but the intent was not to have a back and forth. Rather, have the Budget Trends Commission do their work. And you know, as everybody knows, the members appointed by the Senate, the House, and the governor. And there was a minority member appointed by Representative Siefert and Senator Senjum. So the partisan balance, I mean, in terms of appointments, is, I think, almost 50-50. You know, we've got four former finance commissioners, a Perpich finance commissioner, Carlson Finance Commissioner, a Ventura Finance Commissioner, and a Plenty Finance Commissioner. And the hope is that whatever they come back with to us will not be impacted by decisions we make or the politics of this place. So I don't mind necessarily sending them some things we've worked on, but I don't know that I want to back and forth with the commission.
Okay.
And I think Representative Lincheski would agree with that.
Okay. So just talk among yourselves, informal discussions as to how far we should proceed. I just want to point out again, we have our, myself and the tax chair and the finance chair have sent a letter to the governor that I think tracks with this, is not as detailed. And this is not intended to be a document that forces us to do something, but more a document to inform us as we're discussing to kind of keep bringing us back to basic principles about what we should be trying to do. So it's not intended to be a document that says you can't do something that this says you can't do, because that would not be the real world. But it is meant to be a document that at least you think twice before you do something that doesn't track. That's all. So I'm just trying to give some... We're not trying to jam anybody here. We're just trying to move it forward a little.
Amazing, I survived.
Say, Mr. Chair,
Bedsold might be trying to jam somebody, but
that jam somebody. I think that's a term of art. Who do I talk to so that in the future I can get notice of the meetings? Because I think there were a couple of us who might have been overlooked.
That's my fault. We'll fix that.
Okay, great.
I We'll fix it.
I did get it, Mr. Chair. So
okay, we'll fix it.
Yeah.
So it was
I
not
figured it would. Yeah, no, I didn't think anything of it.
Say that. Go ahead. No.
Okay. So, again, talk among yourselves, and please talk House and Senate. That would be good. Because I think, again, having gone through this in 20 years ago, whether we like it or not, we are all in this together, House, Senate, Executive Branch. The only way to do something is if we all figure out a way to work together on this.
Get on the record.
Anything else?
I'm good.
10 to 12, House members. See, this is the way the Senate can operate. Meeting adjourned.
Yeah, we're supposed to be out of here at 11:30.
Yeah. Okay.